You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, if you guys haven't had the opportunity to check out the Navigator Series, it's a brand new lineup from Lacrosse. They have the Windrose for men and women. They also have the Atlas, and that's what I wore during my rut vacation this fall. Check them out. They're very comfortable. It's a traditional rubber boot, kind of mixed with a traditional hunting hiking boot. They've mashed it together, and the outcome is the Navigator Series. Check it out at lacrossefootwear.com.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. This is a fun podcast where we spend some time with my buddy Jason Boak up in Spearfish, South Dakota. The topics range from authentic manhood to spot and stalk mountain lion hunting. Jason's a former Navy SEAL and an all-around upstanding guy. Be sure this week to check out our buddies over at the Western Bear Foundation. They are a nonprofit hunting conservation organization that is a voice for bear hunters out west. Also, check out our buddies at W Hunting Supply. That's dusupply.com. Right now, they've got a customized tool on their website where you can build your own multi-dog alpha or Astro bundle. If you're a hound hunter or dog hunter, you know what I'm talking about. This is a Garmin product where we track our dogs. But they've got some unique tools on their website, and they've got great customer service. If you have any trouble, call them. You'll be talking to a houndsman or houndswoman that knows the answers. So check out our buddies at W Hunting Supply. Lastly, our buddies at Northwoods Bear Products. With the spring now in sight, seems crazy, but it really is. Next thing we're going to be hunting is bears in the spring. Be thinking about Northwoods Bear Products for their full line of commercial scents. Check them out. And check out the new flashy hat series from Bear Hunting Magazine. We have some really cool hats and also some really cool new shirt designs on our website. Bear Grease, Flashy Mule, and Bear Dogs. We have all kinds of shirts, short sleeve, long sleeve, hoodies, and even some specialty coffee mugs that you can check out at bear-hunting.com. So we're in Spearfish, South Dakota. Spearfish, South Dakota. There's not much snow on the ground. I was expecting a little more snow.
Yeah.
But I'm with my good buddy, Jason Boak. So, Jason, we've known each other for 15 years, maybe?
Yeah, been a while now. Yep.
Probably 15 years. And the sad news is we've never hunted together.
I know.
That's pretty sad news.
That's true.
But we've kept
up. Not for lack of trying.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, we kept up with each other's hunting, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, what I want to talk to you about is some of the stuff going on in South Dakota. South Dakota is a pretty amazing place for wildlife. Yeah. We're sitting in your kitchen just a minute ago, glassing a buck that me and my boys were like drooling over. A nice, what you would call a 4-point.
Yep.
Now, to me, that's like cutting him short big time. That's an 8-point,
yep.
Jason.
Yep.
But you look out and you're like, there's a nice 4-point back there.
That's right.
And I'm like, man, you're only giving that deer half credit. So even with the whitetails, you're going with the 1-point side.
1-point side, yeah. We make them work to be spectacular. That's right.
You know, I was hearing a guy talking about the Southeastern Conference in football the other day, and there's a phrase that we use down there. It just means more down here.
Yeah.
Okay. When you're talking about football, it just means more.
Right.
I think that's the way it is with deer.
Yeah.
It just means more to us. So we're giving a deer that has 8 times.
Right.
We're calling him an 8-pointer. Now, what do you do when you see a buck that's 5 on one side, 4 on one side?
5x4.
Okay, so you go ahead and go ahead and give the full full credit.
Well, we don't want to give him a 5 point because he comes up a little short of that.
Yeah, he's a little shy of that.
Right.
Well, no, I was amazed at the deer just running around in the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a ton of whitetails. Now, we would see mule deer running around spearfish as well, right?
Not in town, no.
Oh, really? So, you wouldn't see mule deer?
No, no. Just the whitetails coming out of the upper hills here.
Okay.
Coming down into town.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's what they would do.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we were impressed, and the kids were glassing these deer. But no, so a little introduction to you, Jason, and we don't have to go into great detail about this, but and I've talked to you some about it, but mm-hmm. you're a former Navy SEAL.
I am. Yep. Yep.
And as it seems like, as with some of these guys, that's not a big part of what you even want to talk about. That's what you did for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
it's a significant marker, significant time in my life. But like a lot of the veterans that are out there across the country, they're proud to have served. They did it with pride and with excellence. And once they exit the military, they look fondly back on it and are proud of what they've done. But life does go on, and we develop new endeavors and new opportunities and move on with our lives.
Right on.
But it never leaves us, never.
Yeah.
It's always a part of us. Yeah.
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 Well, I think it does indicate something about a person to be able to go through Navy SEAL training, to qualify to be a Navy SEAL, to be deployed for as many years as you were. I mean, it is a pretty gritty, tough experience. I mean, that's not doing it justice, but that's what you did for 5 years of your life.
Right.
And now since then you've moved on with a career in IT and a lot of different things you've got your hands in.
Right.
One of those things is, and this isn't even really what you do, but SouthDakotaHunting.com.
Yep. Yep.
So it's a website that kind of entails, what is SouthDakotaHunting.com?
We started it years ago, just as a means by which a lot of the hunters, those that really enjoyed the sport and back when 2010, I think is when we started it, when social media was really getting fired up and everybody was realizing the power of shared community and the ability in their lives. And there was really not an outlet for that around the area and around South Dakota. And so we started that website to create the opportunity for hunters to just kind of share what's going on, as they take their kids out on their first hunt or they kill a big buck or their buddies, they want to talk about the stories and really created a kind of a community to allow the hunting sport throughout South Dakota to raise its head a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's very cool. You know, you said, shared community that made me jump to why me and you are friends.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of a church up here
that's
connected to our church down in Northwest Arkansas.
Right, right.
And me and you at different times have both been leaders of our men's group at our church.
Yep.
And and also thinking about you being a Navy SEAL. I mean, most people would hear that and they'd be like, man's man right there. I mean, that's like the elite top of what a lot of people would consider, I don't know, would have some indications of.
Yeah.
But part of one thing that we would have a really shared value system in is what authentic manhood really is, which mm-hmm. I think for me and you, we would say it's taking care of our family, being spiritual leaders of our homes. It's sacrificial leadership mm-hmm. inside of our homes with our wives. And that's a massive part of both of our lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It really forms the core of how we think and how we make decisions and how we move forward and grow even inside of raising our kids and the activities that we do on a day-to-day basis. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yep.
And Jason, I think that plays in significantly to a man's hunting. And if I may draw mm-hmm. the conclusions there. A lot of guys say, or a lot of guys look at their hunting world and they're trying to figure out like how they can expand it or what they can do more.
Mm-hmm.
And almost all the time, and people may not say it, but the limiting factor of people's ability to hunt often is their family.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the other parts of their life that is that if all the other parts of my life are in good order or well, my family is in good shape and I've committed the time that I need to my wife and my kids, if I'm being the husband that I need to be, the father that I need to be, the business owner that I need to be, then these other places in life have a space.
Right.
And I think so often that's mixed up where guys are trying to create a space to hunt. Mm-hmm. Or they see people travel and they're like, man, I wish I could do that. And maybe mm-hmm. they push the envelope and they go do it and they bargain and they kind of, you know.
Sacrifice the family stuff for the hunt.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And to me, the key is having a balanced life.
Yeah.
Because if your life is unbalanced and you're not a good father, you're not a good husband, you're not a good business, you're not a good employee, and you're stretching yourself to be a good hunter, your value system is all messed up.
Right.
And you're not going to be a good hunter. And not that the whole point of obviously our existence is to be a good hunter, but I think people that would be enthusiasts enough in hunting to listen to our podcast, that's what they're thinking about. They're thinking about hunting. That's a passion of theirs.
Right.
And I've never actually been able to formally say it on a podcast, but you're the perfect guest because, I mean, to even bring this up, I wasn't planning on bringing this. Isn't in the notes, bro. We're going off.
We're off script.
Now. We're off the script, but no, this is good. But, you know, I think about that. It's like, guys are like, how could I travel more? How could I hunt more? Get your life in order in other places.
Yeah.
And then where it does fit, and when you do hunt, you'll be more satisfied. You won't have to be stretching yourself. Your wife will be happy. Your kids will be happy. And it becomes this kind of thing that fits into your life. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
I've been a hunter for a long time, and I really enjoy the sport, and I enjoy the chase and the thrill of the hunt. But I never, you know, the more I've grown and the more mature I become, the more I've realized, you know, I can have a nice buck on the wall. I can have fantastic stories and things to laugh with my buddies. But if it comes at the expense of my wife or my kids and the relationships that I have, you know, being an old man with a lot of bucks on the wall and being lonely just doesn't make
a lick of sense,
nope,
does it?
Not at all.
Yeah. And, you know, talking to you today, I mean, it seems like you're in a season of your life where your hunting is probably different than it's been in the past.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's okay.
Right.
Describe what that season would be, Jason.
So, you know, there's been the opportunity to be very, very involved and grow even the marketing side of South Dakota hunting and the different websites that we've initiated over the years. And over the past 2 years, it's just kind of had to take a backseat to what's been going on in the family and in the business and the different activities. Even my wife has, how we've prioritized her activities and her involvement in community more than what I seek and wanted to do. And so, you know, part of that is the give and take in the family, and there's season priorities. And for me, hunting, while it's one of my loves, it's always going to be there. You know, the same buck might not be, but there will be bucks out on the hill. And so for the past couple of years, it's just kind of taken a back seat to what's gone on in my own and my family. And it really, I haven't lost anything in life by putting it on the back seat. Yeah. I've actually gained more than I could have by continuing with the intensity and the drive and the, you know, the trips and the applications and filling the tags and having the stories and having the horns on the wall. But in the end now, I know it was well worth the sacrifice and the time. Yep.
And your kids are teenagers.
Yep.
And you guys are still doing, I mean, quite a bit of hunting, but it's more focused around them.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, you got a deer hanging out here in the garage now that y'all killed last week.
That's right.
Yep. You don't have any buck tags, got some doe tags.
Yep.
But it's, and see, I think that is a highly valued trait that people that are sometimes really passionate about anything. I mean, mm-hmm. you might be passionate about tennis. Mm-hmm. You might be passionate about something goofy like mm-hmm. tennis.
Right.
No, but it's hard to turn it off. Right. Sometimes as a man, it's hard to channel energy in a certain direction, mm-hmm. but then dial it back purposefully in a disciplined way. And I think that's part of manhood too, is understanding what the emphasis of the season is, because the emphasis of the season may not always be the same thing.
Exactly.
It really may not always be the same thing, and that's okay. No matter what Instagram says, no matter what your favorite guy that you follow, he may be going hunting he may hunt 90 days a year in the fall nonstop. Well, that's not you.
Right.
And you know, I get to hunt a lot, so that's something I'm constantly balancing. Mm-hmm. Jason, we talked about it today.
Right, right.
I'm constantly balancing, you know, is this a trip I should do? Is this something I should do? What should I focus on? And I never take for granted that I should do something just because I can.
Mm-hmm.
Because opportunity is always going to be there. The more that information is disseminated about different places, like what I want to do with you today, talking about, you know, opportunities and what's going on in South Dakota, opportunities will constantly knock on your door. Mm-hmm. But it's like, where are you supposed to go?
Knowing where your life balance needs to be in order to maintain all healthy aspects of life, all aspects of life, is really a mark of maturity.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, I think too about the very, we talk a lot about, I think a lot about kind of the origins of hunting and how it fits into this modern world.
Mm-hmm.
This is what a lot of people would say, is that hunting is no longer relevant. I'm talking about like those who would be against us and not understand our lifestyle and hunting stuff. They would say like, well, hunting's not, you don't have to hunt. We have agriculture that raises meat for us, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually get back to the very origins of why men left their families to go and hunt, it was for provision.
Mm-hmm.
It was to provide stability. It was to give them sustenance. It was to, you know, it all goes back to this thing of provision, of meat. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It goes back to so that kids could be raised and safe. And so if a man's hunting today takes away from that stability of the family, and we're not talking about provision of meat now, we're talking a metaphorical sense of, you know, then I think that's where you would be getting it wrong.
Mm-hmm. You're not doing justice to really the historic and, you know, what it is that hunting is about and always has been about, right?
Yeah, it's not been about this solo pursuit of capturing ego, but it's been about gather meat to provide it for your family.
Right.
Now, we've turned it into more than that, which I think is okay. I mean, we do, you know, to...
It is fun.
It's fun.
It is fun.
We've complexified it beyond that, which I think is okay to go after a big buck and stuff.
Sure.
But I think that done right today, because of the lessons that can be learned inside of hunting as kids are brought into it, as the family's involved in it, I think there's value still for that very reason, not just in meat production, even though we literally are bringing back meat to feed our families. But, you know, like my kids, golly, the experiences that they have and the responsibility that they get to engage with inside of carrying firearms in the woods. And I mean, just this last week, we took all three kids Saturday, 5 or 6 days ago, hunting. We were rifle hunting my kids have their hunter's education cards. It's legal for them to hunt on their own. We're hunting on private land. And I went with my youngest son, sent my two older ones off, and I looked at them both in the eye, and I said, "You got a firearm in your hand. That thing will kill a man, and it'll kill you." I'm real direct with them. You know, putting the fear of God in them. Make sure you know what you're shooting at.
Right.
Don't, you know, be careful.
Use wisdom. It's not a toy, right?
That's right. Yep. And that's a pretty big thing for a 13-year-old to go do. A dad that, or, you know, a kid that's never had the opportunity to do that, that the biggest responsibility that he's ever had is, you know, cleaning up himself after he plays video games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, there's a high-level responsibility that comes inside of hunting that I think adds value and can build a family in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts of it, if I could say it that way.
Yeah, I know for me, that is a huge component of my maturing process, even as a child, growing up hunting with my dad and his friends, going along as the child in the group of men. And it became an avenue to look at role models and see how life was supposed to be lived and be able to watch how, you know, like even gun safety and how my responsibility and beginnings of being able to manage life began in hunting.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's the unique thing about this life is that there's constantly ways to grow inside of whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. And hunting is what we're passionate about.
Right.
And so it's deeper than just going out and killing an animal. Right. I think that's probably the message that a lot of media is putting out now, but I think that's the message that's inside of me is that, mm-hmm. that this thing about hunting is much more than killing. It's a lot bigger than this.
Right.
It can have a lot more significance, but it's certainly not the only thing, and it's certainly not the most important thing, and it's certainly not something that's going to, I think some people turn hunting and interaction with creation and wild places basically into their God, if I could say it that mm-hmm. way, if I just
yep.
am being honest. I mean, they're just like, and to me, there's got to be this wider suite of understanding of God and life and family that gives value to the outdoors.
Right.
The outdoors doesn't validate that.
Mm-hmm.
This validates the outdoors,
right,
if I could
right.
say it that way.
Yep.
You hear that a lot. I hear that a lot inside of media. Mm. It's almost like people are making the outdoors their just spiritual retreat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I don't, if you can't be...
you can't do it in your living room.
That's right.
You know, yes, it's beautiful. Yes, it's serene. Yes, it's quiet. But the same God is in both places.
That's right.
Right.
That's exactly right. We're way off script.
No.
This is good.
That's all right. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, so how did you, you grew up right here and we're in Western South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm a fourth generation South Dakotan. My great grandfather homesteaded out by Faith, South Dakota.
Okay.
About 2 hours east of here. Cattle ranched, grandfather ran cattle. My father actually was a veterinarian, and I grew up helping on the ranch, branding in the summers, you know, working cattle every second or third weekend out that way. We would drive from Spearfish here, but, yeah, grew up very much active outdoors in the ranch environment, hunting environment, and really, really learned a lot of different aspects of life and hunting and guns and, you know, that type of thing in that environment.
Now, is that what I've heard you say that was sort of what led you down to the path of military? I mean, was there a connection there?
Well, a lot, yeah. I mean, as a lot of Western South Dakotans, a lot of veterans up in the upper Midwest, you know, we're most veterans I know may be a second, third generation military veteran. So
yeah.
growing up hearing a lot of stories from grandfathers or fathers
yeah.
having been in, you know, the military before and it really being a service being a component of who we are as we grow up.
Yeah,
you look to your neighbors, you look to those around you, American Legion, VFW in town, you know, military service is something to be revered
yeah.
as we grow up. And
yeah.
so myself, having come from military on both sides of the family, it was always something on the radar, but, you know, being comfortable in the water, being comfortable guns, you know, teenage boy and not knowing where he's going, looking around, thinking, jumping out of planes, shooting guns, blowing stuff up. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Today, we took all the kids sledding mm-hmm. up here in the mountains.
Right.
A little bit of snow up there. And so my kids, we are from Arkansas. Our water doesn't freeze very deep at all. The kids get out of the car and your son goes out onto this icy lake. And I'm like, I totally trust you and I trust him. He's a good kid.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like questioning you, like, you sure it's cool for them to be out on that water? And then you start telling me about like ice and the depths of ice and the strength that this ice has. And I mean, you're totally yeah. cool with it. And so I am too. And they're out there playing on the ice. And then somehow we got on to, how do you survive if
you
fall
through
the ice?
Right.
And you pulled back some of that SEAL training and you described to me how you survive in the ice. which was pretty informative for me.
Let me go through it.
You tell me if I got it. Okay. First of all, everybody's going to go through this ultra shock of cold water. Get over it. Let your body kind of calm down, bob down, and you're probably going to come up in the same hole you came up out of.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yep.
Paddle with your back, with your feet.
Yep.
Paddle
once with your you, feet. Once you reach forward and grab that ice, start kicking your
hands
feet out.
Hands on the yep. ice and flutter your feet till your body comes up.
Kind like of, you were going to swim, right?
Like you were going to swim, and then keep kicking till you're, so it's pushing your body up onto the ice.
Just keep going. If it's thin, it'll bust a little bit underneath your front end, but... And then just kind of shimmy out onto the ice and keep crawling away from the hole.
Yeah. And you said 99 out of 100 people, if they did that, they'd be totally okay. I was thinking 99 out of 100 Navy SEALs, maybe.
Growing up around it, and then our family lived in Canada for 4 years where we watched semis drive on the ice. That was a little freaky, but... Yeah, that ice gets thick, it gets strong.
I've got no reference point for the thick ice.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Well, hey, what let's first talk about mountain lions in South Dakota.
Okay.
To dive to the topic at hand here. Tell me about a lot of people wouldn't know that there is a mountain lion season. And it turns out it's only open to South Dakota residents.
Correct.
But I think it's pretty interesting. Most mountain lions, where there are seasons, they're being hunted with dogs. I mean, like 100%. I would venture to say that 98% of mountain lions harvested in North America legally are harvested over hounds.
Mm.
I mean,
right.
I'm just pulling that number out of my hat, but very few people would kill them any other way, hunt them any other way. But tell me about the hunt here in South Dakota.
So South Dakota has a year-wide, it's actually a year-long lion season. So from January to December 31st, you can hunt lions, and that's throughout the state of South Dakota. But the season in the Black Hills, which is out in the western edge of South Dakota, and it blends into Wyoming, that is a fall season in through the end of April. Anywhere outside of the Black Hills, if you see a mountain lion and you have a tag, you can shoot him all year long.
Largely, is there any quota system?
They do have a quota system. It's 60 in a given year.
60
lions.
Okay.
And they have to, certain ages, and once 40 females get killed in that year, season's over.
Okay, so there's a female quota.
Yep.
Do they ever meet the quota?
They haven't in a long time. Last year, I want to say it was about 21 lions was all got killed last year.
So
a lot of it plays into the weather. Last year, we didn't have a lot of snow, and because we're not primarily a dog hunting lion state, it's spot and stalks. The guys are having to walk them down. And so without snow, it's real tough to get onto a cat. Once you have a lion tag, you can apply inside of a lottery for different draws inside of Custer State Park, some of which, I think it's 12 or 15 cats can be taken over dogs.
Okay.
Three cats at a time during these little blocks of time throughout the fall, spring season. But primarily, it's walk them down. Find
so
them,
tell
walk
me about
them down.
That. Well, tell me what you know about that.
So a lot of guys, there's a very, very passionate group of hunters throughout the Black Hills, Black Hills mountain lion hunters. If you look them up on Facebook, big shout out to those guys. It's a community of hunters that are passionate about mountain lion hunting that really share and talk and tricks and tips. And some of these guys, I mean, have taken a cat 6-7 years in a row. More than happy to come together, spot and stalk,
mountain lion
hunting, and they'll be the first ones to tell you you gotta wait for snow, and you're running the hills, you're running the tracks up there with your pickup, and you cut a track and walk them down, and a lot of the guys learn to think like a lion. They know how they run the ridge lines, they know how the lions hunt, they know how they behave, and taking a deer a week, they know what to look for if they find a deer killed that's been buried, and how far the cat might range, or if he's sleeping off a belly full of raw meat, what he might be doing. So it's really a skill, but it, having never hunted lions outside of the Black Hills when this started, I didn't know it wasn't normal that you had to spot and stalk lions.
Yeah.
Right. And so the fact that there is the opportunity to do it over dogs, obviously in Custer State Park, they can sex them. They can figure out what that cat is up in a tree. As opposed to the rest of us who are walking down a cat, and as long as it's not a spotted and as long as it's not with another cat, it's fair game.
Right.
But you don't know if you're getting a young cat. You don't know if you're getting an old
cat.
And
that's what we were talking about earlier, was that there's been some talk about, you know, if you're spotting stalking a mountain lion, the difference between a young mountain lion and an older mountain lion in a quick moment would be pretty hard to judge.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, there's maybe somebody's killing a juvenile lion. Totally legal, totally legit. But you were saying that the houndsmen are like, hey, we're able to judge these animals and make a decision and take these older mature males. And that's something we talk about all the time, is that, you know, some of these different hunting methods that a lot of people don't understand actually are very good tools for allowing selective harvest.
Right, right. Yeah, it you know, there's been a lot of discussion about it, and I really enjoy the fact that you can do it down in Custer State Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the same time, there's arguments on both sides on why it would be good and why it would be bad inside of the Black Hills as a general rule of thumb. And, you know, it really is tough when you see, you know, and the Game Fish and Parks will publish, because once you kill a lion in South Dakota, you got a certain amount of time where you got to get a guy, you got to get one of the conservation officers come weigh the cat, measure the cat, do all that.
Yeah.
It's really tough when you see, you know, you're watching, you're following the harvest as it's going, because you're making sure A, 40 females haven't been killed, but B, the season's open, and you're watching and you're excited. You see guys take a big monster Tom, and you know, you want to see the photos, or you see them, the weights and the lengths of these cats and the size of these cats come in. And it's real tough to see that, you know, 40 pound or 30 pound young lion be one of the ones that's been taken.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's not spotted, but man, yeah, you know, you always question, how did you not know it was not that small? But yeah, it's exactly that. You take that snapshot, you see that cat looking at you,
it'd be hard to judge.
It'd be hard to judge, right?
Bear and lions just standing out in the woods would probably be similar, in that they, without a point of reference or without a lot of time, without seeing them move, maybe they'd be hard to judge. But still, from a macro perspective, you think of 20 lions last year killed or something.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a drop in the bucket of hunters being able to pull animals out. So, but the spot and stalk thing, I don't want it to sound like we're dogging on spot and stalk at all, but it's incredible that these guys can do this. I was thinking when you were saying these guys really learn and become students of these lions, when I was in New Mexico a few weeks ago, the guy we were hunting with, he's free casting dogs, and during lion season, sometimes he says if the dogs are having a hard time on a track, he will try to guess, but he'll know about where that lion was going.
Mm-hmm.
Because lions are pretty predictable, I've heard, in terms of their travel paths.
Right.
Like if the dogs have struck him in this canyon, there's a good chance that he's going to cross at the head of the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might be able to skip 2 miles off the track and go to the head of the canyon, and bam, the dogs are able to pick it up.
Right.
I bet these guys are doing the same thing.
Yeah, very similar. I've heard stories of these guys, you know, knowing if they're hunting in the same area and they're picking up a track in a certain, you know, in a certain draw or cutting across a certain opening, and it's headed for a ridge line, they know how that lion thinks. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that.
And so they might go down and not see a track cross a road and then assume he's still in the canyon or something. Like if it's going a certain direction, the houndsmen do that. Like track goes into this canyon. Well, let's go to the other side of the canyon, see if he's come out of this canyon. You know, with snow, you can see that. Dry ground, it's tougher.
Right.
But yeah, so I could see how people could do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah. I've really enjoyed watching that. And, you know, it's when you're up in the Black Hills and you're hunting lions, I mean, that's thrilling.
That's
in and of
cool.
itself, yeah.
You know, let me take a minute and describe, and you can help me too, but people may not understand. They may have no reference for South Dakota.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't have until a few years ago, really, but like we drove all the entire length of South Dakota just yesterday. For 3/4 of the state, it's flat Tatanka country. I mean, like
Corn and grass, really just grassland. Yeah,
ranch land, flat. And, yep. Well, rolling hill. I won't say just flat, mm-hmm. but like just classic prairie.
Prairie. Yeah.
And then just all of a sudden, you look out on the horizon and you see literally black hills.
Right.
And the topography just changes into this rugged karst, rough mountain range that has ponderosa pines and, mm-hmm. and from 30 miles away it looks black.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's so easy to understand why they named it the Black Hills.
Right. Right.
And the mountains literally that we're in right here, I think we're talking the highest point in between or east of the Rockies.
Right.
Is Harney
Peak, now called Black Elk Peak.
Black right. Elk Peak,
right.
Which is over 7,000 feet.
Right.
In South Dakota.
Right.
Yeah, I think most people think of South Dakota as a prairie state. They don't really view it, you know, as a mountain state. But I mean, you got a peak 7,000 feet. Where we're at here in Spearfish is about 3,800 feet. Mm-hmm. Where we went today to sled was 4,500 feet, yep, which is pretty good. 46. Pretty good elevation.
Yeah,
and just rough, cool looking mountains.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect habitat from. I mean. One of the big ones is the bird hunting and pheasants in South Dakota out in those grasslands.
They're
and
not here, though, at all.
No. You'll occasionally find one in a cornfield sneaking around, but that's about it.
Now, there are cornfields in the Black Hills?
Occasionally, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a good place for us to talk about the big game species in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. What big game species are there in South Dakota?
So we have, of course, elk, mule deer, whitetail, bighorn sheep, mountain goat, mountain lion. They consider the Merriam turkeys big game in South Dakota.
No free ranging bison.
They do have a bison tag in Custer State Park that you can apply for. And most of the Boone and Crockett records you'll see right now are coming out of Custer State Park.
Those so that's bison. Considered a free range.
Yep.
Free range herd by Boone and Crockett.
Yep. Correct.
Hey, I forgot to say that you're a Boone and Crockett scorer.
You bet.
Official Boone and Crockett scorer.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a free. So you do. You totally have a free range herd of bison in Custer State Park.
Yep.
Custer State Park is in the Black Hills.
Correct. Yep. It's about.
Is that where Custer got taken down?
No. Named after him, but has a little further out. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So that Custer State Park's one of the areas where a lot of the big elk, the bison, obviously hunting on the dogs over, or hunting the lions over dogs allowed down there. So,
Okay. So talk to me about obviously like a bison hunt is going to be a very small limited draw hunt. We've seen that the lions are residents only. Mm-hmm. Elk is residents only as
correct.
Well.
Correct. Yep.
And so that's kind of, a neat thing for residents, but probably the biggest non-resident attractions are going to be whitetail, mule deer, and then pheasants.
Pheasants,
which is probably the biggest.
That's what we're known for. Right?
That's what South Dakota's known for.
Right. State bird, and that's the one that brings in a lot of the revenue from the outdoor industry into the state of South Dakota.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pheasant hunting.
Yep.
When's pheasant season?
It starts the beginning of October. We have the locals only weekend. Youth weekend, locals only weekend, then it opens to the public.
How long does it stay open?
I believe it's been so long, honestly, since this may be where we
edit this out, Colby.
That's right. I believe it's through the end of December.
Okay, so it's a couple months long. Yeah. So it's season right now.
Right.
So yesterday when we were driving through South Dakota, the entire width of the state on the interstate, I was encouraged to see all the businesses that had banners out in front of their gas stations and motels that said "Hunters Welcome" mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It South Dakota really is a hunting state.
Yeah, we are definitely a hunter friendly state. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
You told me there's 800,000 people in South Dakota.
That's right.
The entire state.
Just over 800,000.
And right? See, that was news to me as well. Arkansas has 2.8 million people in the whole state. And we are at the lower tier of population of states, especially in the East.
Right.
And anyway, 800,000 people in a state this big is sparsely populated.
Yeah, I think just over 11 people per square mile.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, so pheasant. Now, people can get non-resident mule deer and whitetail tags.
Correct. Yep. Yep.
And that's a point system, draw system. Talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, it's been South Dakota actually went through a pretty big change when it comes to our point and our draw systems the last couple of years. In an effort to make it give opportunity to more hunters was the objective. There were a lot that agree, a lot that disagree with the strategy that the Game Fish and Parks took. But in the end, you know, it's going to make those that want to hunt to have the opportunity to hunt for a buck, given it may not be the year you want to get it. But, you know, if you prepare, you buy your points and you make the time and plan, you'll be able to hunt for a buck in South Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, and for those of us that are residents, you know, we can always hunt archery tags. We can always get does. I mean, you can put meat in the freezer, you know, and for those that are just strictly horn hunting, you got to make your plans. For those that want to meat hunt and feed the family and make the jerky, you know, there's always, anywhere you go, there's opportunity.
Are there whitetails and mule deer distributed across the entire state?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So even in the eastern...
I should say, yeah. So the mule deer hang a lot in the western portion of the state, out in the ranches and that. The further east you go, the more you get into farm ground, the corn, soybean, the agricultural growth stuff that South Dakota puts out. And there you'll see a lot more of the big, heavy, palmated, gnarly whitetails coming out of that area. So the mule deer, largely out in the west in the ranch land with the cattle, wide open draws. But
and there's approximately 2 million acres of national forest or public land in
between
total.
The grasslands and the Black Hills National Forest, Custer State Park. I believe the number is just over 2 million public acres. And then, of course, ranchers and private owners do a lot of leasebacks to the state to allow for public walk-in, even on private ground. And so there is just a ton of ground all over the state that you can hunt on as a, you know, just walk in, signs everywhere as you drive up and down the highway where a hunter could get his tag in that county and hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you would say, we were talking about this earlier, but I mean, a guy could have a decent chance at a decent mule deer up here if he drew the tag and public land. You really think so?
Absolutely. You bet.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch the Clay Newcomb Media video of version the spot of and stock. That's
oh,
right.
Oh, man. Well, I got to put in. Yeah. I've never killed a mule deer.
Okay.
Never killed a mule deer, never hunted a mule deer. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm
You're due.
Is there any chance of drawing on the first time?
You know, it's with the point change that's happened, I don't know how it's affecting the non-resident, granted, because I'm not real read up on that. But I do know, you know, for the local residents, a lot of it really depends on whether or not that unit that you're applying to has a lot of competition. You know, the Game Fish and Parks is very diligent about managing the number of tags, and with the ebbs and flows of the counts and the management of the game, you know, those tag fluctuations will happen every year. As far as the non-residents go, a certain percentage of the tags are allocated to the non-residents. So, you know, if you've got points and you're one of the ones that decides to apply in that area and you've got at the top end of the point counts, you're going to get a tag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a guy yesterday at a gas station, pulled up besides getting gas, and he got out and he had camo. I could tell he was hunting, and I started talking to him. I said, "Are you hunting?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "We've been mule deer hunting." "Really?" I said, "Do any good?" He pulls out his phone, and after about 30 seconds of talking to him, I realized he was like the real deal, about a 50-year-old guy, kind of thin and wiry. And he said, "Man," he said, "Yeah, we're bow hunters." And he flipped open his phone, and he had, I don't know how much it would have scored, but I bet it was 25, 27-inch wide mule deer, big forks. And he said, "Yeah, I killed this last week with my bow." I was like, "Really?" I mean, I was like, "That is a big mule deer." I said, "Is that a good one for?" And he said, you know, that's a good deer. He said, they're easy to kill. That's what he said. He said, and I knew what he meant was that if you're really good and you have good land and you know where you're going and they're easy to kill for you.
Right.
But, he was just like, yeah, you ought to apply. You ought to come. I mean, he was just like, totally just like, come up here and hunt.
Yeah.
I should have got his phone number, man. That's what I should have. No, he was a neat guy. There was a lot of, I was surprised yesterday coming through about how many hunting. We saw a buck in the back of a guy's truck. I mean, you know, that's exciting for me on a family road trip to be like, look at that guy. There's a hunter.
It's really exciting in September. You know, late September, mid September, all throughout September, when you see some of these guys coming out of the upper hills with the elk hanging out the back end.
Yeah,
some of those big fellas coming. Yeah.
So, so we've talked about mule deer, whitetail, non-residents as well can apply for, but they're going to be kind of they're going to be more in the eastern part of the state, but there's plenty of whitetails statewide. They cover the whole state.
Correct. Yep.
But they're not going to be in the same terrain as the mule deer most of the time.
Most of the time, right.
They're going to be they need a little more cover.
Right. So growing up, the ranch my grandfather had out by Faith had both. We had a lot of whitetail down on the creek bottoms in where we'd raise some of the grains for our cattle. But out in the outer pastures and the draws and the wide open areas out in the buttes, we'd have a lot of mule deer. So, you know, even in a small area like that, and that was, you know, around 10,000 acres was all it was, you're going to have a range of different type of game available.
Yeah. Bighorn sheep.
Yes.
World record bighorn sheep came out of South Dakota.
That's right.
Where was that thing killed?
I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it was on this side of the state, though.
Yes, it was.
I mean, there wouldn't be bighorns.
No, it would be in South Dakota here. I forget his name off the top of my head, but yeah, I think.
It was a young guy with a bow.
Yeah, really young guy.
Yep. With a bow, I think. Yeah. Yeah. Golly, I saw pictures of it. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I mean, I don't know much about bighorn, really. But golly, it looked like its bases were as big around as a. I don't know that bad.
And they have only the bighorn and the mountain goat. They'd only recently opened those back up again. The mountain goat really got roughed up through the 80s. I think they shut her down in I want to say 85, 86, and they opened it up. I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Really?
And it's just two tags a year they've been given.
Okay, so it's just a small hunt.
Just letting them in. And some of those are spectacular. Goats as well.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean the bighorn, the mountain goats, they're the once in the lifetime. So a resident draws, you work. You know, I know these guys that are pulling some of these tags. A couple guys from East River pulled them the last couple of years and I kind of followed him on Instagram and Facebook and that, watching him prep and hunt. And I mean, he spent a good month and a half scouting, looking at the herds, following them around before he selected, you know, the billy he wanted.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty incredible. Well, those are the main big game species that I wanted to talk about. Do you do much pheasant hunting?
I've done a little bit of pheasant hunting. I got a lot of buddies from out east that do a lot of pheasant hunting. I've done it a few times with friends, done it a few times with family, you know, different friends, even around the Black Hills, will raise some like penned pheasants, release them out on their cornfields and things. And so just to have friends and family come in. But out east, it's pheasant hunting's almost a religion in and of itself.
Now, pheasant aren't native. Is that correct?
Correct. They were brought into South Dakota years and years. I want to say 1800s. Just the climate, the food, everything. Just,
you know, that's really unusual that the bird would do so well here that it would become. It'd be interesting to take a poll of all the people that are listening. How many would have known that a pheasant was not a native game bird to North America?
Right.
I mean, a few years ago, I might not have known that because you think of quail, pheasant, ducks. Like it's just like, well, yeah, pheasants. They're part of the landscape.
Right.
But for them to be adopted by a state agency, usually introduced species are shunned by state agencies. Hogs, now guy down in Texas, they're not shunned necessarily, but You know, there's a lot of introduced species in Texas, but some of them, like the Nauga, have free range populations and breed on their own and do all their stuff. But anyway, I always thought that was interesting about pheasants.
Yeah. And it was so long ago, granted, that they became part of our culture, our landscape. It's just who we are now.
Yeah. It's an American bird now. Right, I mean, just functionally, it's it's an American bird.
That's right.
For sure. But do they have bobwhite quail up here?
They do. They do. In fact, we have them in the hills even. And, you know, I never saw them out in Faith growing up out in that, you know, out in that area, but we do have them around.
I could get excited about some bobwhite quail hunting.
Lots of sharp tails, lots of, of course, the pheasant you'll see all throughout the state. Just depends on the cover and what you got grown in the fields. But partridge, doves, a lot of dove hunters. All throughout.
Interesting. Well, it truly is an interesting state. It encompasses a lot of different topography and a lot of cool big game species.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yep.
But yeah, every time we come out here, it's I've yet to hunt here.
I was gonna say you end up coming, but you never bring a gun and you never plan to come during hunting season.
I know. Yeah. Well, so this is my staging place for going further west to bear hunt.
Right.
I come here, so en route from Arkansas to Montana where I bear hunt, this is further than halfway, but I end up staying the night here with in spearfish and then going on. Speaking of that, black bears. Black bears in South Dakota. Ready to go.
You bet. We for years they've been kind of rumored to been caught on trail cams, and we didn't know if it was a Bigfoot or a bear, but in the last couple of years they've gotten good confirmation that they're pushing in largely from the western side of the Black Hills that's over in Wyoming. And so we're anxious, you know, the hunters. I know for the ones I talk with, I speak with, I've run with a bit, you know, it's good to see that a game can push back in, you know, no season yet. There weren't when the lions came back. At some point as they come in, as they grow, as they breed, you know, it'll definitely be something that the state has to look at, you know, keeping an eye, communicating with the landowners, the hunters, as they see them. But I think it's a good thing for the Black Hills.
Yeah, I mean, driving around today, I mean, this is perfect black bear country. And we're not, how far away from the Wyoming border here?
We're about 11 miles.
Oh, I mean, we're just right on the heels of Wyoming. And the Bighorns in Wyoming are how far? The Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming.
Those are about 3 hours drive. Would 2.5 hours? Yeah, the Bighorns are.
Okay.
They may not even be that far.
That sounds about right for when we drive out there from here, driving west. But the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming would be great bear country.
Right.
I mean, so you think about that in terms of bears moving, you know, 2.5 hour drive might be, 120 miles or something. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if there was no fragmentation in terms of, you know, interstates and different things can fragment populations and keep them from moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. So from here to there is nothing really.
Right.
So it makes total sense that bears would be coming into the Black Hills. Certainly they were here.
Years and years ago,
Yeah, I mean, they were natively, they were definitely here in the Black Hills.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of Native American culture and history and you know, the stories of their past are centered around black bears in the Black Hills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll be back. That's the cool thing about these bears is that they're bouncing back all over the place. Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening ecologically and on a landscape level in North America is beneficial to black bears.
Right.
Really is. I mean, I can't think of any places where you hear, oh, the black bear population is really struggling. I mean, you don't hear that. Now, certainly there are pockets of suitable habitat that bears have yet to infiltrate into. And the Black Hills would be a great example of that. I mean, like, they're moving back in.
Right.
But once they get a foothold here, you won't be able to get rid of them, which is a good thing.
Right.
Especially with the conservation and scientific wildlife management laws that we have today, I mean, they're never going to hunt them out.
Mm-hmm.
And the habitat is going to be protected because all this country that they're going to live in is public land that's mm-hmm. that's not going to be, you know, altered in some way or mm-hmm. sold off and developed. I mean, so it's like once they get back now at this kind of stable time in history, they'll be here.
Right.
You know?
They won't get decimated again.
That's right. They won't. Yeah. They won't. Right. A lot of people might not understand that, but mm-hmm. yeah. Well, okay. A couple of specific questions. Gun of choice, rifle of choice for Jason Boak for hunting South Dakota for all that you do. I mean, just like one, you got one gun.
One gun.
You got one gun. You know, I'm talking caliber. Yep. You can go specific if you want.
I grew up shooting a Winchester Model 70 243. I have evolved that to the 270.
Okay.
I like that 270.
270 cartridge.
Yep. I can take the pronghorn antelope. That's my favorite animal in South Dakota to hunt.
Okay.
You can knock down the lions and the elk with it as well.
What is there a specific load you like? I mean, do you have a bullet weight preference or,
you know, no, I would say I've shot everything from the boat tails to, you know, we're kind of playing with some of the Barnes rounds right now, but, a lot of it varies and depends on what we're hunting.
Were you trained in long range shooting in your SEAL training?
I would say I didn't go through sniper training, so I wouldn't ever claim that I'm a sniper. Did we do a lot of, you know, 600 yard shooting, 500 yard shooting? Yeah, you betcha. But precision long range shooting, me personally, trained in the military, no. After the fact, you know, we shoot deer. You know, get the guns nowadays, the trajectories, the ballistics inside of these rounds, and some of the guns, you know, you can reach out there and touch them if you have to in this wide open prairie, and sometimes you really have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You cut me to the chase. The next question was favorite animal to hunt. You said it. Why? I've heard a couple of Western guys say that, and that really surprised me. With all the other stuff that you can hunt, why is pronghorn your favorite?
You know, part of it, I think, is just the adventures growing up out in the prairie, and that pronghorn antelope, that thing can move when it wants to. You know, I think they say it's the second fastest land mammal, and it'll 60 miles an hour, some crazy number. I mean, they'll flat out move, and you know, they're very I've heard a lot of guys argue that some of the ones coming out of Wyoming or it depends a lot on what their habitat looks like, what they're eating, what kind of environment they're living in. The ones we're hunting here in Western South Dakota, particularly, and I know the same holds true in middle of the South Dakota as well. You know, a lot of it's grass, just prairie grasses and things like that. And so you think, what's the highest, best tasting steak you can buy? It's those grass fed, corn fed, you know, beef cattle. This pronghorn antelope is he's not eating sage. He's not eating stuff like some of the ones throughout the country are.
Oh, I see.
These pronghorn are eating just prairie grasses and native stuff. And something about the meat, it is just, for me, it is the best tasting wild game meat out there that I have had. I mean, I've eaten a lot of different stuff. And one, if you get it and you run that guy to death, you make him go 60 miles an hour and you get him frothy under the, you know, the front shoulder, he's not going to be that good. But you get one of those does, or you catch one nice and calm and put him down clean and treat the meat right, it is like nothing else.
Really?
And, you know, and part of the adventure is they are, when they're in the rut, they are absolutely crazy. Those bucks, I've had bucks run up to me within 20 yards charging you. You're standing there waving a...
Flagging them.
Just a little. I mean, I've pulled a envelope with my tag, the little white envelope that your tag comes in out of my back pocket.
That's just wrong to use your tag to call them in. That's unethical.
Pull it out of your pocket and wave that envelope, and that
really?
Buck gets so curious, and he comes running at you and walk in. And I mean, we have story after story of the group of buddies that hunt that... The antelope, just, they're fun. I mean, you just end up with stories hunting antelope almost like none other, just because they're so curious, you know, and they guys will put flags on hilltops and sit within 20, 30 yards with their bow. And a few hours later, that antelope is nuzzling that flag, wondering what it is. I mean, they just have a curiosity and a boldness to them that if you need to, you can leverage, but at the same time, it's just fun to hunt.
It seems like
them.
they're at the right time. They're really responsive.
They're really, really responsive.
And that is fun in hunting when you can call, well, you're not calling them, but flagging them in.
Yep.
I've never experienced that with.
Yeah. The guys that I know that archery hunt them, they say that is one of the most fun archery hunts there is, just because of that thing. I mean, you're flagging him in, you know, you find the buck and you're getting his attention, as opposed to everything else, spot and stalk. You don't want him to know you're there. And these, you want him to know, you want to pique his curiosity. And, you know, with decoys or with, you know, the, whatever flag or different piece you use to bring that guy in, you catch him at the right time and he's out to kill you. And the adrenaline rush as that guy is coming at you 20, 30 miles an hour and pulls up within 3 yards to stop short and snort and whistle at you. Yeah, it's a different kind of adrenaline rush.
That's pretty cool. Okay, I heard you describing last night the way that you like to cook. I think you called it tips.
Yeah, so we do. Well,
tell me the whole process.
You betcha. So South Dakota is famous for chislik. Chislik. And I don't know if, you know, different listeners have heard that, but it's almost a flash fried meat. So they'll marinate the meat. And
what do you marinate it in?
So we have kind of a special blend of red wine and soy and Worcestershire sauce and red pepper flakes and different things that got handed down from hunting buddy to hunting buddy and generation to generation. And we kind of use that marinade in a special way. But the chislik itself is just a flash fried. It could be marinated in any number of things, but it's hot oil and just straight in. And so a lot of South Dakotans would have had that, you know, at the VFW or at these different men's gatherings or hunter gatherings.
So talk to me about the whole process, though, because you told me about battering.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
how you do
so that's
that.
The tips, and that's one of the. It's kind of a thing here in Spearfish. One of the restaurants in the area kind of has a famous set of tips, and you know, there's an old hunting buddy of a lot of us out here in the Spearfish and Northern Hills area, Raleigh. He would have had this recipe for tips years and years ago, and we cubed the meat and. From myself, it would be the pronghorn antelope or venison or one of those into an inch and a half. And once it's cubed, you kind of let it come to room temperature and nice and clean. You want it almost, you know, backstraps, roasts, whatever it is, doesn't matter what meat. And you take it and it hits that marinade for about 15, 20 seconds. Not long. I mean, just enough to give it a little bit of flavor, roll it in a self-rising flour, and then into a 425 degree hot oil for, you know, 15 seconds to a minute, however you like your meat, and out it comes. And I mean, we that's kind of our tradition over July 4th is eating the wild game, doing tips that way, we call it.
Okay.
You know? And I mean, it is fantastic.
Chislik.
Chislik's typically done in smaller pieces without the breading, just straight crispy on the outside and, you know, medium rare on the inside.
Really?
We do the tips with a little bit of breading and that marinade type of stuff.
Okay.
And yeah, so both those ways are some of our favorite ways to eat the wild game that we take.
Okay. Here's the next question. And you may have to come back to it if you can't think of something right off the bat. What is something that you do or your family does that's like a great tip for hunting, skinning, cooking, like secret tip, not secret, just like, let me give you an example. Okay. Mm-hmm. On the last podcast, we were up in Canada and or a couple podcasts ago, and we were talking to Tom Ainsworth, and Tom uses an air compressor to clean the brains out of a skull. So let's say you've skinned the skull of a deer and you got to take it back. And he puts a little copper tube on an air compressor fitting, 120 psi, and you take that copper tube, you put the horns and the skull down in the bucket, pointing down, you put that little copper tube up there, and you just
blow it out.
One and it is clean as a whistle inside that brain cavity. Okay, I got so many responses off that. People are like, that is an incredible tip. Guys were sending me pictures of them using that. So,
that's a good one.
Okay, you've given us a good one on the meat.
Yep.
But is there anything you guys do that's like special?
Boy, I'd have to think about that. I know, you know, tips for us is I know I'm, for a lot of the big game hunters, I am creating the ultimate faux pas and saying that I take those loin steaks and we make tips out of those.
Okay.
That is the, you know, the cut on the animal. But, you know, we really protect those for the tips.
Okay.
I would say if that is the one tip we have or the one trick we use, it would be how we prepare that stuff.
And, okay.
I mean, our family.
Fancy tricks for like sharpening knives, handling pistols. You're a pistol guy.
I am.
That you were trained in Navy SEAL and how to shoot a pistol. Yep. I'm just thinking of. I'm trying to probe you here.
Yeah. No, I, you know, pretty straightforward. Okay. Subscribe to the, if you're going to pull the trigger, make sure it's going to fall down. So, you know.
One shot, one kill.
That's the objective. Yep.
That's the Jason Bowden tip.
That'll get it done. That's right.
Yeah. Right on. Well, hey, this has been informative. I've learned some stuff. Good to have you on. I'm glad we went off script at the beginning. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. And, any closing comments?
You know, I don't. I appreciate the opportunity to just kind of get on here and talk about South Dakota. You know, like I said, South Dakota is one of those places in the country that not a lot of people have heard about, though our state's recent marketing effort to, you know, we won't go there yet, but I'm sure many of the listeners have. You go on social media right now, you're going to hear a lot about South Dakota, but rest assured that not all of us are crazy, although the marketing efforts is getting people to talk about South Dakota.
I think we got
to
say
now
it.
Now we got to go there.
We got to say it. We laughed about this last night for 30 minutes.
Right.
So they're trying to put a curb on, like every other place in the country, on meth.
Right.
And so therefore,
it's a real problem in South Dakota. It has become much, much more so in the last few years. And so they spun up a marketing effort that any of the listeners can go out and see. And but meth, we're on it, you know. And while
that's it,
meth, that's, we're on it.
So that's on billboards. That's on radio. That's on this
TV,
is their marketing campaign. And the point of the phrase was like meth. We see the problem.
We're all on it together to deal with the issue, right?
Except the phrase is meth, we're on it.
Right.
And so they have taken tremendous flack.
Right.
And Jason was so kind as to enlighten us about this major marketing
initiative going on, right?
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So, you know.
That's your closing statement.
Well, that aside, you know, something, you know, while that is what we're currently in the current news cycle famous for.
Yeah.
The, you know, within this podcast and the listeners know that that's not all South Dakota is known for.
No.
So
lots of much better stuff.
Right.
Really. I thought it was a joke. I mean, like for 10 minutes into the conversation, I was still like, my mind was trying to compute whether this was true.
Right.
It was like, everything Jason Boak has ever said to me has been true. I don't believe what he's telling me. But it's crazy.
Yeah,
well,
it
hey, not, we can't just leave South Dakota in the lurch here. You know, Arkansas, we've had our recent national faux pas, particularly with our football team.
Mm.
So Arkansas Razorbacks are in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, which I mentioned earlier. I'm not a big football fan at all. But, you know, I kind of pay attention to it at times. And so the Arkansas Razorbacks are 4-18 over the last 2 years. And so we just fired our football coach mid-season. SEC football team firing their coach mid-season because we got beat by Western Kentucky by like 30 points. Mm. Which the Razorbacks, have historically been a very competitive, nationally ranked, usually team. Mm-hmm. You know, if you looked at the broads, and then we got beat by, and nothing against Western Kentucky, but they're not a national competitor. Right. And anyway, so that's kind of our
claim to fame right now.
That's huh? our claim to shame.
But, but it all joking aside about the effort and the marketing, you know, South Dakota is definitely one of those states that if you're a hunter, if you're passionate about the sport, and you know, even like we shared at the beginning, as part of your life balance, are looking for opportunity and you know, the different variety of hunts. Yeah, it's hard to, from our opinion, it's hard to beat it.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Incredible state. Well, hey, we always close the podcast by saying keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Right on.
Right on. All right. Perfect.
Very cool.